From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 391, Running a Private Cloud, with guest Alan Sugano. Recorded Friday, October 3rd, 2014. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. We're back again with another show, just like every week. And I have with me today Alan Sugano, a past guest from the ADS Consulting Group, and he is the president of the company, founded back in 1991, specializing in networking, server virtualization, workstation virtualization, application virtualization, security exchange, custom programming, a whole host of good stuff. But virtualization is a big piece of your world these days, isn't it?
It still is and continues to be, yes.
It's never going away. I've been doing DevOps talks lately, and I keep referring back to this. You know, a lot of this is possible because we've sort of turned configuration into this virtualized script so that we can create things fast, tear them down fast, and keep getting better.
Absolutely. In fact, we just rolled off of, we're actually still in the middle of it. Because of virtualization, we're able to, we have this one client, we actually set up a DR plan for them. They're all virtualized, mm-hmm. and replicating data between Los Angeles and St. Louis. And we just ran the ultimate DR test and failed over to their DR site, and we're running there for a week.
Nice.
And then we're going to fail back this weekend.
And back's the tougher part, in my experience. Like,
it is, unless you plan for it. Actually turned out to be not too bad because we just reversed the replication flow. We estimate that the failback time, because we're going to be doing an incremental replication as opposed to the entire enchilada, might take a little over an hour.
That's not bad.
That's not too bad.
Yeah. But you're doing the important thing. It's not that you have a backup solution. It's that you have a recovery solution.
Yes. The client was concerned, though, well, how do we know this works? And I said, well, if you really want to make sure it works, we'll flail over to the DR site and run for a week and then fail back, and I can't think of a better test than that. So knock on wood, it went amazingly well on the failover part. I was just kind of waiting for the brick to fall on my head, but no bricks. So that's a good thing.
I worked with a customer where we just started swapping between the two data centers every month. It became ordinary. That's what you did, which is really what you want. Nobody was afraid of it.
Right, exactly. I mean, you hear horror stories of people trying to fail over and not only failing the failover, but also breaking production.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that virtualization allows you to do is you can fail over in a bubble and make sure that everything's absolutely rock solid before you actually pull the trigger. And you just can't do that in a physical world, or it's really difficult to do.
Yeah, you know, virtualization fundamentally changes the way we roll out new versions of stuff now. I mean, I remember having to take servers out of a load balancing pool to update them and then bring them back in. Now it's all in the cloud. I just create new VMs with the new versions and then just start mapping the workload over to them.
Right.
Shut down the old ones and let them go away.
Right, right. And if it blows up, you can fail back and punt, right?
Yes, and leave the old ones running long enough that you know you could just switch the networking rules back to it. You know, it's in some ways it's easier. It's got more pieces in some respects. I mean, maybe it's just that we got really good at the old way and we're still trying to get that good at the new way.
Yeah, I think it's like any disruptive technology. You know, there's when you look at it on hold, there's more benefits than there are disadvantages. So net, it's a gain.
Yeah.
And it's like any other new technology. When you step back and look, are we getting a net positive here? And if the answer is yes, then a lot of times people are going to tend to gravitate toward it.
And I still have a group of customers that want nothing to do with the cloud. Like they've decided in their business for whatever or their way of working, the cloud's not an option. But I'm seeing cloud technology show up in these internal private data centers that they're building their own systems using those same patterns.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. So I know that's what we're going to be talking about today, but we have a few clients that are interested in moving to the cloud. Our major concern as a consulting firm is because if they went to a third-party cloud, we would lack visibility into the infrastructure to fix things.
Right.
And at the end of the day, that's what we do. I mean, the client doesn't want to really hear, oh, this or oh, that, or da-da-da, we couldn't do this, we couldn't do that, we can't see into this. They just want it fixed.
Right.
So that was one of our really big concerns, is that if something went down, we would just be like the client, on the outside looking into the fishbowl and really kind of feeling very helpless.
Mm-hmm.
So our big idea that we launched at the beginning of this year, last year, was our own private cloud service. So it's all vCloud Director based. Everybody runs in their own virtual data center. And it's very secure, so you have to VPN in to get into it. Everybody's VLANed off. Everybody runs in their own separate bubble, but the hardware is shared. So it's an interesting model. Knock on wood, it's actually gone very, very well. We brought up our fourth client on it 2 weekends ago, and it actually went really, really well. There are some challenges, though. So
this is a service that ADS provides. You're running the infrastructure for a few of your customers now, and using a cloud design?
Yeah, so we did some due diligence. You probably know we're located in Los Angeles, and one of the concerns that we had was these things called earthquakes.
You have them every so often. There was one a little northier recently.
Yeah, and they can be a little scary.
Yeah.
I've visited almost every colo facility in the Los Angeles area, and some were good, some were not so good. I'd heard some really good things about Switch Las Vegas, the SuperNAP in Las Vegas, and so I went to go do a tour last year, actually right around this time last year, and I've been doing this so long, you get a little jaded, saying, okay, whatever.
You've seen one data center,
you've seen them all. And I'm looking around, and oh my gosh, I was so impressed. And I'm very difficult to impress. Just the way it's designed, the way it's thought out. If I had an unlimited budget and unlimited resources, my colo would look like this facility.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
it's amazing.
Is it a true 5.9s data center? Because I've toured a bunch, and there's lots of 3.9 data centers, but 5.9s are rare.
Yeah, I think they're the only one to obtain, I think it's level 4 status in terms of uptime.
Wow.
I've talked to, you talk to salespeople, oh, blah, 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 yada, yada. Yeah, we've never gone down. It's like, okay, sure.
Sure.
But then I've actually talked to people that have been in there for a couple of years, and they're like, well, we had one guy I talked to, he said, we had one minor problem with BGP. BGP circuit, it took us down for maybe half an hour. Short of that, that's it.
Right.
I was like, wow, really? He's like, really?
And whenever you're dealing with a data center that's on the internet is not as reliable as your own hardware, right? Like, that's
right.
Sort of the reality.
So that's one of the things. They have 50 WAN providers in this facility.
Wow. That's an intersection. That's what that is.
Yeah. As I recall, they were actually, the data center was built by Enron.
Back in the day.
And then when they went bankrupt, the founder actually was the only guy that showed up at the auction to bid on the property.
Wow.
So he got it at a smoking deal. It's exactly how it built 50 on-net data providers. We have two redundant power circuits coming into our rack, and each one of those redundant circuits is triply redundant. So they have three, it's ridiculous. They have three separate infrastructures to power just one circuit. So what they can do with that is they can do maintenance on one circuit and still be doubly redundant.
Right.
Instead of triply redundant.
And and of course, being in Nevada, they're on the east side of the fault line. So when California falls into the ocean, they're beachfront and still running.
Right, so then, their real estate instantly goes up in value, right?
So that's where you host out of now.
Yeah, and that's the other thing we picked Vegas, is it's far enough away to be away from earthquakes, but close enough where I could drive it if I had to.
Yeah, you could.
Ironically, they don't have earthquakes, they don't have tornadoes, no tsunamis, no hurricanes.
No water.
No water. They do have actually an occasional flash flood, but they're higher than... I think the Strip is one of the lowest points in the valley there. But The other thing they do that's different is the hot air containment is actually completely plenumed off.
Oh, interesting.
So what happens is, you know, like in most data centers, you have hot, you have a cold, hot, hot, cold.
Right.
You know, anyway, in terms of aisles, it's actually cold, hot, cold, cold, hot.
Right.
Anyway. But the point there is that the hot air and the cold air commingle with each other. So what they did is they actually plenum back the hot aisle so it's completely dedicated. So the cold air never mixes with the hot air.
Nice.
You actually have to go through a door to get to the rear of your server, and it's pretty uncomfortable in there. It's probably over 100 degrees.
Yeah.
But they have cool air coming in from the front, so all the equipment stays very, very cool. And they're, I think it's the PUE, which is a measurement of how efficient they are at cooling the facility. It's a ratio of how much watts it takes to cool a watt that you draw on power.
Right.
And they're, I think, at like 1.1. So in other words,
wow.
It takes 1/10 of a watt to cool a watt of power.
A watt of usage.
Yeah.
It used to be that being at 2, anything under 2 was amazing. But
yeah.
For a long time, it was like 1.6 was as good as you're going to get. And below
yeah.
that, it's just kind of magical.
It is. And that was, I was like, wow, really? And they're like, really?
Especially when you talk about a place like Nevada, where it's quite hot and quite dry.
Right. And they have their cooling facilities are actually outside of the building, external to the building. They look almost like big tractor trailer rigs.
Right.
And I think they have 5 different methods of cooling that they can use based on the environment. So one is obviously just vent to outside air. They have, I think, a heat exchanger. They have traditional AC and 2 other ones I can't think of.
Interesting. Yeah, it's
It's crazy. They're very, very efficient in the way they cool. So the side benefit of that is their power density is at least triple or sometimes quintuple what I've seen at other data facilities. So the holy grail of colo-ness is, you know, the Cisco UCS blades, right?
Right.
You can get, there's 8 in a chassis. In most colos, you can get maybe a chassis and a half if you're lucky. These guys, I had heard that they had 3 fully populated chassis. I was like, wow, that's impressive, because they just normally just generate too much heat power, and they blow up the rack. So
yeah.
I was at the facility. I said, okay, I'd heard you guys had 3 racks with 3 UCS chassis. Can you show me one? He's like, there's one there, there's one there, there's one there. I'm like, holy moly, you got to be kidding
me. You've got to be pumping very cold air into that, because it heats it in a big hurry.
And also, you got to be able to pull in crazy power density into that rack without flipping breakers.
Yeah.
So that was really, really, really impressive. And unless you know what you're looking at, it's like, okay, I just see a bunch of...
It's just more computers.
Yeah,
well, and you sort of get back to the reality. You said this off the bat. Like, your customers just want this stuff to work. They shouldn't
right.
be qualified to assess this facility. That's our job.
Right.
And then ultimately,
right.
you can provide service to them that way.
Right, right. So that's why we decided to... I mean, for us, logistically, it's a little tough to do migrations. But I think it's going to be well worth it if we ever have a major, well, not if, but when we have a major seismic event in the LA area.
Right.
So.
You'd be able to function.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we made a pretty significant investment into this infrastructure. It's probably close to $500,000. I look at the stuff, it doesn't look like $500,000, but.
Right. It's amazing. Stuff so dense now, you just don't understand how you can pack so much money in such a small space.
It is. I had heard that actually Intel just released, I think it's an 18-core processor.
Right.
That's just not right. I mean, it's right and so wrong at the same time. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's just crazy.
Density just keeps getting higher and higher and higher.
Yeah, I mean, we used to look at, you know, quad-socketed boxes. Now, like, dual socket is almost overkill when you have 18 cores. It's like, really?
For sure. Hey, I got to pay the bills here. The Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment, from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan configurations of every node in your environment, no matter what the platform, and alerts you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, or at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. When I just did a show recently with a SQL Server guy, with Brent Ozar, and we were talking about hanging a terabyte and a half in a 2U chassis. Like, that's just a lot of RAM.
It is.
So, but when you, you know, you got quad socketed 18 core processors, like that's 72 cores. Just getting enough RAM to each of those cores to be usable. You know,
yeah,
realistically, you're already at half a terabyte of RAM minimum.
Oh, yeah, just to get in the door. Absolutely, yeah. I agree. It's in to take advantage of it, because otherwise the processor is just kind of twiddling its thumbs going, okay, give me something to do.
Yeah, I'm starved for memory.
So right, it, right.
And that's, yeah, it's, the density is insane. And that's on one board, probably in a 2U chassis. Like, it's just stunning how much compute power that is. But again, for most folks now, it's not something they need to worry about. We get to be specialists back here and dealing with these things.
Right. The downside is with a terabyte and a half of RAM, it takes like, you know, a week to boot. But
yeah. Yeah. RAM testing takes a little while.
Yeah, it just takes a little bit of time.
I got some stuff to look at. Give me a minute.
Yeah.
Let's not even talk about the storage density you get out of that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So your customers weren't comfortable going to the cloud. They'd rather have you run it as a sort of a private cloud solution.
Yeah, I mean the path of least resistance for us is to take our existing clients, that were looking maybe at doing a server upgrade, and then I said, well, you can do an on-prem server or you can use our cloud service, and actually quite a few of our clients are opting to go with the cloud service.
Right.
So obviously we'd want to open it up to the universe as well, but
sure.
Existing clients.
But it is this attitude, I think, that's becoming more acceptable of, I don't want to own this stuff anymore. I'll pay for it by the month.
Right. And it also is really good for clients that have highly elastic computing needs.
Right.
Like we have one client that is actually getting acquired by another company, so they have about 200 people, but after the acquisition, they're going to shrink down to maybe 30 people.
Right.
So, you know, the ability to be able to shrink down, otherwise if we bought them on-prem servers, you know, we'd have to size it for 200 people as opposed
sure.
to 30.
Well, I mean, how many times have we dealt with exactly that issue of you have to provision for peak? You know, I do high velocity e-commerce sites, so we always provisioned everything for peak, and 80% of the time it was laying around not doing much.
Right, but you gotta design for the train wreck.
Sure.
Which is, well, I just did a talk on disaster recovery, and we had that discussion. I said, you need a replication line that is fast enough so that not if, but when you need to do a full replication, because it will happen, you get the data across in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
And don't ask me how I know about that. Yeah. Otherwise, it's kind of like riding a skateboard across the country.
Sure.
And technically, you can do it.
Yeah.
You might get killed in the process, or it'll take you a really long time.
Yes. And you won't be happy when you get there either.
No, you'll be really upset, and you're wheels will be all worn out. And you'll
be sad. Talk to me a bit about vCloud Director. So this is VMware solution for essentially running your own cloud infrastructure.
Right. So it's one that's been used for private cloud, hybrid cloud, and public cloud. There are a number of partners that are using vCloud as the platform. Essentially what it is it's kind of like server virtualization on crack.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the next it really is the next almost paradigm shift in terms of virtualization technology. So, you know, server virtualization, right, you abstract the hardware from the server and you can run it on different pieces of hardware.
Right.
So with vCloud Direct, you're abstracting the entire data center from the hardware,
nice.
Which is a kind of a little bit difficult to get your head around. At least it was for us when we did it. The other thing is that it actually requires, or they recommend, that you actually run a separate cluster to manage the vCloud infrastructure. So you need an infrastructure to manage the infrastructure. I was looking at the documentation like, wow, really? Like, wow. I'm like, do I really need that? They're like, well, that's best practices. I'm like, oh my gosh. So that's how you get to $500,000 in a New York unit.
Oh, yeah, okay. Do you separate off the storage infrastructure from the compute as well?
The short answer is yes.
Right.
You do. You basically, when you look underneath the sheets, you can see it. But in terms of the virtual data center, essentially what you do is you assign a certain amount of CPU cycles, a certain amount of memory, and a certain class of storage, And then basically you create a virtual data center for the client and they put their stuff in there. And if you didn't tell them, you would just think it was just their stuff.
Right.
The scaling is a little challenging in that you have to really watch, you know, and the model still holds true. So, you know, usually the first bottleneck you run into is what we were talking about earlier is memory.
Right.
So you really have to make sure that you never go into memory overcommit or everybody will figure it out really quickly. Hey, this thing's running.
I'm not alone
really,
in here. Dang it.
Really slow. Somebody did a directory and now I'm just crushing my, you know, yeah, it's not good. So you want to really make sure you stay ahead of that curve.
And you're just reminding us that the folks that run cloud have challenging problems too, right? Like it's easy to be the customer and just run your apps. That's its own set of problems. But on the back end, you're watching a whole other level of stuff.
Right. And so, you know, anal retentiveness definitely helps when you're running cloud.
It takes a certain personality.
It does. And there is a tremendous amount of responsibility to make sure that things stay up. So, you know, everything in our infrastructure is redundant in terms of production. So obviously if we have one, we have two.
Right.
Two firewalls, you know, two separate trays of SANs, two, you know, multiple nodes. And
are you actually running a third-party SAN product or is this just a software solution from VMware?
It is we're running the left-hand stuff from HP.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, the store virtual. So it's a physical SAN. It's been working really well. It's all 10 gig based. And that's the other thing, the challenge we ran into with 10 gig is, and you already know this, but man, firmware drivers are super sensitive on 10 gig.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if it's a Tuesday and you're feeling fine and you have the right driver, it probably will work. But, you know, heaven help you when Wednesday rolls around.
It's funny that we've never gotten that leveled off. Like, why is this so difficult?
Yes, it's weird. We ran into a really nasty problem, which has been fixed with a firmware flash since then. But on the HP SANs, the 1 meter cable and the like 14 meter cables would work, but the 5 and the 7 meter cables would not work. And we were using the copper cables with the embedded GBICs.
Wow.
And we were first setting it up and I had one of my employees there and okay, so now we're going to make the storage visible and now we're going to create this storage group and I can't see it. And then I'm pinging the SAN and I'm losing like every other packet. I'm like, okay, something is wrong at a fundamental level here. And it turned out to be the cable. They sent me out a 1 meter cable. It worked. The 14 meter cables worked, but the 5 and the 7 meter cables did not work. It just did not make any sense. Since then, you know, fast forward like 8 months, they came out with the firmware flash for the cards that fixes the issue. But that's the other thing with 10 gig is, man, the cables. I recommend if you do 10 gig, you know, you stick with the same vendor for everything 10 gig. So, same vendor for the switches, your SAN, the cards, everything, and then make sure that you get cables that are specifically approved for that 10 gig architecture.
Wow.
Theoretically, they're interchangeable.
And in practice, no.
And yeah, sometimes in practice, not so much.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the reality is you see that in gig as well. It's just that it fails quietly. You know,
right.
I definitely found machines and configurations where you're not getting anywhere near a gig's worth of bandwidth out of
right.
that. And it's so many things that it might be, right down to you use cheap jacks, you know? That
right.
It's all of these components actually matter. They just fail elegantly. And it feels to me like 10 gigs not failing elegantly, almost intentionally, because it's not like you put in 10 gig to hope to go fast. I need this speed.
Right.
And it better work. And if it doesn't, I need to know.
Right. So, you know, I guess in a very twisted sort of way, you almost want it to fail spectacularly, right?
Yeah, this sort of silently, you know, I've run into this where it's like, this is a 1 gig connection, but we're not even getting 100 megabits out of this.
Right.
You know, and it was a bad Keystone jack in the end.
Mm.
You know, just you sort of track that thing down and you realize, oh, okay, you know. Wow, no wonder that sucked.
Right, like really? Yeah, so the one thing that's really nice about 10 gig is when it does work, it's
magic.
Smoking fast.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. It's magical. It really is magical.
And it's not something you run into workstations anyway. This is the backbone of your array of machines.
Right, right. But things like backup happen a lot faster. We're using the Exagrid with Veeam to back up to the Exagrid appliance. So the backups happen really nicely, and then we dump those off to tape, and then the tapes get cycled out by Iron Mountain once a week. But the backups are really, really nice. And then, vMotioning stuff across from one host to another, doesn't really matter how much RAM it has. Most of them will move over in sub-minute.
Wow.
It's amazing. It's really,
and the customers largely, this is transparent to them. This is you fussing over your infrastructure.
Right. So we can, we usually still do the patching after hours, but right. That being said, we can move things around and, start patching hosts and nobody even notices it, which is exactly the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
So the analogy is it's working on the airplane while it's still flying.
Yep. And you're able to just move a bunch of people out of the seats, change all the seats, move people back into those seats, change other seats, and just keep going.
Yeah, they're like, hey, these are new seats. How did that happen? These are more comfortable. Okay, we'll stay here.
We'll keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really important, especially with a lot of the, shell shock stuff, where you have to patch and you really don't want to bring anything down. So that's always a challenge no matter what, and that always will come up, so... It really is nice to be able to work on stuff without having to take it down.
Yeah, and deciding that that's a primary goal. Still dealing with lots of organizations who are like, hey, just not a lot's happening between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. Go ahead, shut it down, make your changes, bring it back up again.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fewer and fewer folks these days.
Yeah, we're finding that things are always happening, even if it's not actively being used and it's getting backed up or... somebody's running some process, and it's getting more and more difficult to shut things down after hours, not to mention the fact that, I think the myth is, right, is IT people are all night owls.
Right.
Because, they're up at 5 in the morning or 3 in the morning doing stuff. It's like, guess what? We don't have a choice.
Yeah, that's how we have to work. Well, and funny you say, we're still doing this. You're still working at your least peak times. But
right.
In theory, if this is working the way it's supposed to, nobody should be able to tell.
Right, right. So that is the hope we're definitely getting there where you're able to take things down. Maybe not during, you don't want to take it down during production hours, but, after 8 o'clock in the evening might be reasonable because, you just might see a very minor performance impact.
But not after midnight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, because you can still keep the stuff up and running. So that's I like sleep at some point. So,
so what about at some point you're going to get a few more customers on this? You're going to start saturating your infrastructure. You got to buy more, and it's going to be different, right? Because hardware keeps moving forward.
It does. We kind of designed it to scale, so probably our next big investment will be to increase the memory in all the hosts. Then we're probably looking at a couple another trays of sand trays. Compute wise, we're actually doing okay. I've been monitoring the CPU utilization, and I get spikes to like 12%, 15%.
Nice. Are you underutilized then? I mean, what's a safe number?
We're about at half capacity right now,
right?
In terms of what we can hold, we can, with our existing infrastructure, I can probably double that because of the memory.
Yeah.
And then in the rack that we have, I can probably triple it in round numbers before we have to go to a second rack,
more space.
Yeah, which are great, great problems to have. I have to find more money because we have too much demand. It's a good problem to have.
It'd absolutely be a good problem to have. And that's always, I think, the challenge here is building out this infrastructure is this big upfront commitment, and then you've got to amortize it over time. Can you get enough customers and enough work to make it worthwhile?
Right. And I actually joined a group called Vistage, which is a kind of a CEO group, because I wanted feedback before I jumped into the pool here, in a reality check to just run it by some other CEOs to see if I was on the right track. And one of the questions that ironically they came up, he said, well, is this like betting the farm or just the back 40? And I'm like, well, it's not the farm, but it's definitely more than the back 40. So if it doesn't work out right, I'm going to be really sad.
Yeah.
So I'm really, you know, thankful for my group to give me some guidance on, you know, this and that and the other thing.
This is sort of an expansion of your line of business. This is very different from consulting.
It is, and it's kind of complementary in a way because the consulting side is insanely labor intensive,
yes.
Obviously. And unfortunately, well, or kind of in a good way, I guess the cloud side is very capital intensive. Once
right.
It's up, I mean, it's minimal. Yeah, I need to look at it a couple, you know, maybe a couple hours a month for patching and monitoring, of course, things like that. But in terms of once it's up and running and short of upgrades, it just kind of runs because that's why you pay $500,000, right? It's good. It just kind of runs.
Yeah. But it's also, I mean, it's a different style of thinking, too. Consulting is very urgent. The customer is calling. Deadlines are set. You know, so there's that constant pressure where it's up to your own diligence to make sure your cloud is healthy.
Right.
And stay focused on, are we on the trend lines? Seeing,
right, exactly.
Seeing failure before you fail.
Right, exactly. So you always want to stay ahead of the curve. You know, we have kind of a 70-80% rule. So when we get to close to even that, or sometimes even before that, we're already upgrading.
Yeah, you've got to be well ahead of it. You don't want to be like the cable company that suddenly the service you sold, I bought 100 megabits, I just can't actually get 100 megabits.
Right, and that's, we never, ever, ever want to get to that position, which is why I think the easier sell was for our existing clients, because they know how anal retentive I am. Like, you really kind of need to upgrade this memory. It's like, well, can't we wait? It's like, no, you need to do it, because what'll happen is if you don't, you're going to get a big job. We're going to need to spool up a bunch of servers, and then it's going to run it's going to run really slow.
Right.
And then you're going to be sad, and then you're going to have to get the memory, and then you're going to have lost productivity. It's like, I'm not going there.
Yeah, just ahead of that. Well,
be ahead of
I
the
guess
curve.
The question is how spiky your customers are. Like, what's your lows and your highs like that you can you anticipate it? You know, the downside to a small cloud infrastructure like you've got is it's only a handful of customers.
Right.
So one customer still represents a huge amount of your potential workload. The bigger, this is one of those things where I feel like as it gets bigger, it gets flatter. The law of big numbers works for you.
Right, it does. It kind of all evens out. And actually, even with a smaller infrastructure thing, it already is still kind of evening out.
Nice.
So the things that stay static are really easy to predict.
Yeah.
Like memory and storage is relatively static. CPU, just because...
It's CPU.
Well, you know, on most Windows servers, they just don't really get slammed that hard unless you're doing big, big SQL or big RDS or virtual desktop stuff.
Right.
The CPU utilization is usually not that bad, and that's what we've kind of experienced. Of course, that being said, now we're going to probably get a big
virtual desktop. You are baiting the gods of vengeance and irony, Alan. Baiting them.
I'm just kidding.
But I love this idea of seeing trends in the utilization over time so that you could pretty much anticipate, we're going to need more memory in 60 days. You know, let's get on that.
Yeah. So even our memory right now, we're roughly about 60% capacity.
Right.
So, and I can double that again. So we're probably looking at a memory upgrade maybe in the next 2 quarters, if that, unless we get a big client. That would be an awesome problem to have.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah,
the big client goes a new parts order.
Yeah, the good news is that, like you said, the hardware costs keep coming down. So I paid $30,000 for the memory in our hosts, and that same memory today has been dropped to about $16,000.
Wow.
So that's a good thing.
It is a good thing, but it also puts pressure on you to postpone.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Now, there's a character challenge here, too, of knowing your data and knowing the market. That's got to be tricky.
It is, and actually, that's one of the tough things in setting this up is it's like, well, I could do it right, or I could do it, I don't want to say cheap, but less than expensive.
More profitably?
Yeah, and you know, every time I was at that crossroad, I looked and went, you know what, let's just do it and spend the money. So... That's another reason I got to $500,000.
You bet.
It's like, wow, how did this happen?
Yeah.
And then you look, it's like, well, this and that. And, you know, they're unfortunately very large purchase decisions, you know, $50,000.
And at some point,
this
stuff's going to amortize out. You know, X Mini, I want to talk to you in a few years when you're looking at that gear is as old as it's safe to run. Now it needs to be replaced. And, you know, you're going to have paid for it by then.
Gosh, I hope so.
Yeah. Alan, I don't envy you, man, but I'm glad to hear this story. It's very cool to meet a cloud operator.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the things that I've learned in consulting over the years is when there's a paradigm shift, you don't fight it.
Yeah.
You just accept it and figure a way to leverage it. Otherwise, you end up going out of business. And we've seen this happen time and time again. You know, first it was Novell, then NT, then the internet, then virtualization. And now this seems to be the next big shift.
And certainly an opportunity space for the right group of guys that want to do this.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's definitely scary. But at the end of the day, we do infrastructure, so we have the expertise to know how to build it. It's just a question of ponying up the money and the guts to actually
make
take the leap of faith. Exactly.
Alan Sagano, thanks very much for coming back onto the show.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate
it. We'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.